Hello, and welcome to the Voices of World Christianity podcast. My name is Noir, and I'm a third-year PhD student at the University of Edinburgh. My PhD project, which has recently changed, is looking at theologies of hybridity, migration, diaspora, etc., etc., within the context of the Zomi diaspora in Europe. So I'm Zomi myself. We're a predominantly Christian ethnic minority group based primarily in the northwest of Myanmar in Chin State.
Yeah, hi. Welcome to the podcast. My name is Chow. I go by Chow to my English-speaking friends, but my Chinese name is Ma Zhong Chow. So for those of you who speak Mandarin, you'll hear that. I'm a second-year PhD student. I'm studying world Christianity at New College of the University of Edinburgh. And my topic is I'm looking at much-needed research on the charismatic faith and lives of Chinese Christians living in America, particularly focusing in Southern California.
Hello, I'm Ratu Lung. I'm more casually known by my shortened name, that is Tu. I was born in Tamenglong, that's in the state of Manipur in northeast part of India. I belong to the Rongmai tribe under the wider Naga tribe of northeast India. Currently, I'm 2 years into my PhD research at the University of Edinburgh, and my research looks at the dynamic between Rongmai Christianity and their indigenous life world of locality, of landedness, and how these things encounter and entangle and relate with one another. Well, now that we have introduced ourselves properly, I want to just give a quick mention of the support that we have received to do this project. As said, this is the first episode of our podcast project, and this episode was supported by alumni and friends of the University of Edinburgh through the Student Experience Grant Scheme. So big thank you to the Student Experience Grant for the support given to launch this project. We're excited and we're looking forward to see how this pans out.
Yeah, but thanks for the fancy mics.
Mm-hmm. Yes, thanks for that. So Voices of World Christianity, Chao, would you like to open us up in this conversation? What in the world is world Christianity?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I mean, this is it's a combination of two very common words, right? World and Christianity. Put, you know, when we take them separately, I'm sure we all understand what they mean. World, you know, the world we live on, right? Christianity is a big religion. Most people have heard of it, and some of us probably have different responses or feelings when we hear the term Christianity. But when putting this particular form, world Christianity, it takes on a very particular meaning. And I think the way I understand the term is that it has both a descriptive as well as a prescriptive dimension. So what do I mean by that? I mean that descriptively, the term is trying to describe something, right? And it signifies really or highlights the natural development and the consequence of over 2,000 years of this outward expansion of the Christian faith from its very beginnings in modern day Middle East. Right. And the result of this expansion through, whether it's through intentional or unintentional migration or through the deliberate propagation of the religion, is that it is a faith that's practiced by people from all around the world. Right. That's why it's world Christianity. And these people are living in a very radically different mm-hmm. cultures. Right. So but also the term mm-hmm. also has a prescriptive function. And that's very important for those of us who are studying world Christianity, because it's trying to correct this erroneous belief that Christianity is a European and American religion, which comes out of these regions and is primarily for Caucasian people. So I hear this a lot, you know, like that's a white man's mm-hmm. religion. It's not for us, but that's not true. Mm-hmm. This is a falsehood, because in fact, in the past three decades, we've seen a huge shift of Christianity, which has moved from the Northern Hemisphere to the Global South, right? This is a transformation which compels us to re-examine the past, relook at the past, as well as reconsider the present, as well as the future of this global religion. So so kind of to summarize, we consider world Christianity as the study of this evolving global religion, whilst acknowledging its plurality of substance and form, practice, theology, etc., its history via Christian missions and migration, as well as its various developments in the future through the lenses of ecumenism and isolation.
That is such an impressive intro to World Christianity. I'm always so impressed by that. I love that we've given Chow the hardest job and he's like smashed it.
Nailed it.
Yeah. So a little bit about the format of the show. We're going to be, each podcast episode is going to be looking at a particular theme and how it relates to world Christianity. So for example, topics that we're hoping to discuss include post-colonialism, gender, migration, digital technology, food and hospitality, things like that. And the reason why we're kind of approaching it from this angle in terms of looking at these specific themes and then bringing them into conversation with world Christianity is because of a range of reasons. I think firstly, in my head at least, like grand subjects such as, you know, gender and post-colonialism, et cetera, they have significance across like a very wide range of fields and disciplines. And personally, I don't think that world Christianity cannot and should not be inward looking, but should instead engage critically, reflectively, substantially with these big issues. Because after all, you know, we're scholars, we're human scholars, these are human experiences, human phenomena, and we're kind of wanting to engage with those and from a kind of perspective of open-mindedness and, you know, critical and helpful dialogue. And I think something that is also worth noting for me personally is that, like, I've always kind of seen world Christianity to be like a very open field. I don't know if you guys have kind of come across that kind of understanding of world Christianity, but like for me, it's such a wide-ranging field and a wide-ranging kind of area of study that brings in so many different disciplines and stuff like that. And I think that's one of its strengths, but also one of its pitfalls. Like, it's hard to kind of define what is world Christianity, what counts as it, what, you know, what do we do when we do world Christianity? So we're kind of trying to, like, with that in mind, with the broadness of world Christianity in mind, we're hoping that, like, by bringing in these big themes each week, then we'll be able to kind of engage fruitfully in these and kind of just basically bring them into conversation with world Christianity or within world Christianity context and ask questions like, so what does world Christianity have to say on the topic of gender, or who in the field of world Christianity is talking about migration or digital technology, and how does thinking within post-colonial theory reflect on the way in which we might engage with a history of missions in Africa or Asia, things like that.
Yeah, as we continue to talk about the format of the podcast, we are looking forward to the bringing in people to feature people on each episode to talk about these issues. And I think, yeah, I don't think we'd mind to spend every episode rambling between just the three of us, but I think it'll be we're quite thrilled to be able to bring in these voices of world Christianity, researchers and scholars. Firstly, we're looking forward to bring in our PhD researchers from the Center for the Studies of World Christianity in the University of Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. And hopefully beyond the center, we'll see how it goes. But we're excited to bring in these PhD students to talk about a particular topic, a particular issue from their research and from their fields of interest. And yeah, we look forward to learn from them, from their works, from the insights of our early career researchers in that way. And in other episodes, we are also excited and we look forward to bring in more established scholars and academics who can help us to unravel and to disentangle many of these issues that we're going to be talking about. As Norm has said, these are huge topics, huge issues that we are dabbling in. And we are looking forward to hear these experienced scholars talk about these things. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to be able to chat with these experts and to learn from them. That's going to be a treat for me. And the reason why we're starting this podcast is because we believe that it's going to be a treat for anybody else who would have the interest in that. So that's the reason why.
Now, I think it'll be so fun to like chat casually with like Emma Wildwood and Alex Chow, our supervisors. Just be like, hey, let's talk about stuff. Yeah, I'll record you doing it.
Yeah, you find out kind of that, right? You know, and we know this personally, but we find out that, you know, they're all human beings with, you know, with their own aspirations.
Shocking.
And challenges.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So it's quite interesting to get that kind of that human flavor, and we'll probably try to capture that in this, right?
And I think it'll be fun to kind of talk about this stuff in a more casual setting as well, because obviously within academia, we're also used to like having conference papers and presentations, and obviously there's a time and place for that. But it'll be interesting to see how that kind of translates into a kind of more casual podcast-friendly chatting dynamic.
Right. I think one of the big aspect, one of the big angle that we are approaching in this podcast is that we are giving a disclaimer about our locations, where we're coming from. And I think mm-hmm. that allows our academics as well to talk more casually. They are not mm-hmm. speaking for World Christianity or for Chinese Christianity or Naga Christianity, but they're speaking from the particular location. And so, yeah, I think that allows us and our features to talk more casually. Speaking of location, Noam, you wanted to focus this episode on location.
I did. You want to open us? Yeah. So we kind of was brainstorming ideas for what we should do in terms of the first episode. And we kind of wanted to do like an introduction to ourselves and this podcast, but we also wanted to kind of connect it to World Christianity. And I suggested a theme of location. So I kind of thought the idea or the concept of location as a both as an introduction to ourselves and as an introduction to World Christianity is, you know, would be a really interesting starting point. Because firstly, and obviously, location is pretty central to the field of World Christianity, right? It's the world. But where in the world are you? So the whole purpose, at least the way I see it, of World Christianity is to kind of broaden our horizons, our notions, our histories, our theologies of Christianity beyond its Western vantage point. So immediately when we say this, we're centering the importance of location when we come to World Christianity. Where are we speaking from? What areas, regions, viewpoints are being included and privileged? And what areas, viewpoints, regions are being excluded when we speak about Christian theology or history, et cetera, et cetera? Who is speaking? And what's their own personal location within their context? So I think the idea of location is really key in World Christianity, at least in my understanding. Because in World Christianity, we have scholars who are saying, all right, so we've looked at the history and the nature and the theology of Christianity within Europe, within America. Let's look elsewhere, because that's not the full picture. And I think the second reason, as I mentioned, for starting with location for our very first episode was because we thought it was a good way to kind of introduce ourselves and to kind of say, hey, you know, we're not mm-hmm. speaking for the entirety of the field of World Christianity on this podcast, and it would be impressive if we could. But, you know, we're certainly not speaking for all of Myanmar or the Zomi in my case or the Naga in Tu's case or Chinese mm-hmm. Americans for Chow. Like, I kind of wanted us to be able to kind of locate ourselves in the first episode and say, I'm going to talk about World Christianity from my perspective as a Zomi woman who was born in Myanmar but was raised in Britain. And that's my location. And mm-hmm. take everything I say with a pinch of salt. So having said all that, I think I'm just going to... Sorry again. So with that in mind, my own location, this is something that I've been kind of thinking quite a lot about as I embark on this new line of research for my PhD project. Part of my project looks at concepts around hybrid identity and the social location of migrants from the 1.5 generation of migration. So those of 1.5 refers to migrants who were born in the country of their origin, but then moved when they were at quite a young age, but kind of find themselves split between those two places because they still have strong memories attached to home, but then they also grew up in an entirely different culture or society. So I'm kind of really interested in looking at theologies and theologians who have kind of explored these ideas of hybridity and multiple identities, and I'm looking at it from the viewpoint of my own diaspora. So location is very important to me and something that I've been reflecting a lot on, you know, big life-changing questions like, who am I? Am I British? Am I Zomi? What position do I occupy? Where do I belong? You know, casual things like that. So I can come to World Christianity and come to this podcast as a Zomi woman, Southeast Asian woman from an ethnic minority who has endured decades of oppression from a country which itself has had a long history of political turmoil and to this day is still undergoing a lot of instability. But I'm also speaking as someone who was mm-hmm. raised and educated in Britain and who is in many ways very British. I don't know if you could tell from my voice, even though I look physically different from most people around me. I don't know if that any of that kind of resonates with either of you guys.
Yeah, is that a very posh accent, huh?
It is a posh accent. I hate it. I'm like, yes, I'm working class and I'm down with the people, the proletariat. And then I'm like, but then I sound like this. So I don't know. Something I'm working on. But I feel like it's probably going to be disingenuous if I like fake a working class accent.
Yeah. I mean, that's an aspect of your location. So
right. Posh from Oxford. Oh, God.
Well, you're literally in Oxford right now.
I am in Oxford right now. Yeah, I'm visiting family right now.
Yeah, I think I can speak for myself as well. I think I feel happy to begin the podcast with an episode with a disclaimer of sorts and clarify about my own location. Mm-hmm. And I think this past few days in which we've been trying to think about this, what is my location, it's been quite helpful for me actually in trying to understand where I'm located, from where am I doing my research, from what location am I talking about theologies, and from what angle am I exploring other options and other viewpoints. So my location, I come from over a decade actually of church ministries in evangelical circles, in student ministries in the city of Shillong. I had a stint in Charismatic Presbyterian mega church in Seoul and in Ansan in South Korea, and experience at a Baptist church in Vancouver in Canada. And even in Edinburgh here, I'm serving at a local evangelical church, which is predominantly Chinese community. So I think all these experiences somewhat explain why I'm quite deeply interested in world Christianity. But yeah, as for my theological, my quote-unquote intellectual location, over the years I've been exposed and I've been influenced by theological works by evangelicals in North America, in Europe, and some Asian theologians. But currently in my research right now, I'm deep diving into the theologies of people on the ground, local Christians from village in Manipur. And my goal is to understand their lived and their practiced theologies. So right now, my goal, my orientation is to learn and to explore, and maybe through my research, highlight the alternative ways of theologizing, especially of indigenous peoples. And I'm focusing more on the Nagas, of course, but I'm also looking quite curiously at Southeast Asia and other parts of the world. And as for my own actual geographical location, I mean, speaking of location, geographical location is quite important for the Nagas for me. So even though I've lived in different parts of the world, I feel like I'm located in my ancestral homeland, which is in Northeast India. So that means I'm a Rongmei Naga. And what that means is that my own experiences, as well as our collective experience of the Rongmei people, is marked by marginalization, tensions with state, with governments, with other tribes, and all of that spicy stuff. So I guess I can say that I inhabit and operate from a multiplicity of localities, multiple points of departure in the way I do research, sometimes in ways that are even contradictory and paradoxical. And so actually when we were brainstorming for name for the podcast, I actually suggested Paradoxology as the name of the podcast, but you guys thought it was a little too intense, so
I just couldn't say it. Paradoxology, like every episode will be like Paradoxology. Welcome. No.
That's true.
Paradoxology.
Paradoxology. Yeah,
but in any case, that's the reason why I was suggesting that is because that's kind of how I'm approaching the study of world Christianity in my own research. And of course, that means a lot of headache to my supervisors who are having to deal with all this paradoxes and all that stuff. Yeah. So yeah, that's a little about myself. Chao, you want to take over?
Yeah, no, I think actually paradoxology is not a bad term. You might want to coin that term for the future. I'm sure it'll appear in some theology books in, you know, some distant future.
I think Hillsong has an album, Paradoxology.
Ooh, interesting. Okay. Do you want to brand yourself after Hillsong? Was the question.
I didn't.
I'm okay with that. You know, I'm studying charismatics. That's fine.
That's right.
So, Noam was talking about 1.5, right? I guess I would be defined as a classical 1.5. Born in China, immigrated to U.S. when I was 5 years old. You know, if you're familiar with the U.S. context in terms of Chinese immigrants, which there are many, many of them, you'll realize that a five-year-old immigrating to the U.S. is typically we don't expect them to understand Chinese to be able to hear it, to be able to speak many words, and not to mention be able to write and read, of which most of these I'm able to do quite well at a proficient level. I read the Bible in Chinese. I'm able to type in Chinese and communicate with other people in Chinese. Although my handwriting is terrible, it's my wife has told me it's that of a third grader or a second grader. So, and that makes sense. I don't practice it.
How is your handwriting in English?
My handwriting in English is probably also second grade.
How's your handwriting in English? Yeah. Okay. All right. So there's one lower.
I mean, these days you're always typing, so you don't really need it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all suck at handwriting right now, right? So, but you know, I've been a little bit different because since my teenage years, I think my first visit back to China was when I was 13, right? And so I've had the privilege of going back to China almost every year for either tourism or to visit family in my hometown of Xi'an. So because of that, I've always had a strong connection, strong bond with China and the country. You know, I saw it. I saw my home city of Xi'an go from a really poor, like, small city, and now it's quite a bustling, modern city. Although not quite as modern as Shanghai and Beijing, but yeah, not too bad. So, in addition to that, my parents, yeah, especially my father, he forced me to speak Mandarin at home. So that was really, really wise of him, you know, because then I picked up my Chinese and I was given this basic tool to go ahead and develop that. After my college years in the U.S., University of Maryland, I studied international relations. I moved to Beijing, and that's where I lived and worked for 4 years. And that's where my Chinese became really good because I worked with Chinese coworkers, right?
Nice.
I used it. You know, they say language is all about immersion, right? What more immersion could you have than just living with the language all day, every day? Right. So it's also during my time in Beijing that I was baptized into the Protestant faith of evangelical nature. I was baptized in an urban house church. And for those of you who are familiar with urban house church, it's quite a unique place to be, right? And so while I was living in China, I encountered all these different types of expressions of Christianity. Some were quite unique. I visited a very charismatic rural house church system in China too. As I was beginning this PhD journey, I was thinking about what research topic would be most interesting to study, right? And I was reflecting upon my past experiences in China, and something that really came out and popped out at me was, it's always been with me, but it was a disagreement or a mutual misunderstanding between Ling'en and non-Ling'en Chinese Christians. For the sake of this podcast, we'll translate Ling'en as charismatic, right? And so to understand this disagreement, I felt that it would both have academic as well as quite a lot of practical value, right? So I basically carried this topic and I've transplanted it into the Chinese Christians living in the U.S. And it is a topic for here too. And I'm specifically focusing on Southern California. California, if you're familiar with, is a very, very special place to Asian Americans, particularly Chinese Americans, because it was historically the first place, the first location that the Chinese immigrated to in the U.S. back in the early 19th century. They came because of the gold rush. They also came because their hometowns were having a lot of economic natural disasters. And so they stayed here for the gold rush, but then they also transitioned to building railroads, building the first transcontinental railroad, as well as doing a lot of service industry things. So today, even today in California, we see quite rapid growth in Chinese American population. Right now, there's about 1.5 million people in total, plus minus a few hundred thousand. And because of that, there are also hundreds of Chinese churches across California. And that's why I'm based out of here to conduct fieldwork. I'm currently in California.
Cool. Right. Would you say you're charismatic yourself then, Chao? If we're talking about location, let's just put all of our theological cards on a table. Who's a Baptist? Who's not?
It's a good question. When I conduct interviews and my charismatic interviewees ask me if I'm charismatic, I will say I have had charismatic experiences.
Ooh,
I've had visions. I've spoken in tongues one time. So you know, I build that bridge, right? But what I consider myself,
you're a dabbler.
Right, we all try to negotiate our way, right?
That's so interesting.
I'm open to charismatics. I think it's cool. I'm cool with it.
It's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like part, I would say I'm kind of like part Baptist, part Anglican in you know, some of the doctrines, and then part charismatic as well. I'm just a fun old fusion, keeping in theme with the topic.
Well, not according to what I observed. I mean, I saw you kneeling and praying in tongues. You're super charismatic.
That's true. Yeah. I'm like, why did we do that? Was that in samples?
Yeah, samples, right?
Samples. Wow. You study like that?
No, yeah, that's true. I mean,
must have been a dream.
You gotta do it to get a PhD done.
Is that one of your visions, Chow?
Yeah, one of my visions.
I think, I mean, just to go back onto the topic, like, it was so interesting listening to you guys, like, talk about your own locations, because something that I kind of hadn't really realized until we started doing this was how we're all coming at it from very, like, mixed, multiple, you know, locations, right? Like, I'm coming at it as someone who's Omi, but also British, and, you know, as I mentioned, quite a kind of a mix of theological and spiritual backgrounds. You're coming at it from Chow, sorry, you're Chow, you know, talked about your own experiences of being both American and Chinese and growing up within that culture. And then, you know, you've had like worldly experience ministering to multiple various, you know, congregations, the nations. Yes, exactly. Like that, I think that's so interesting. I didn't really realize, you know, how we had that in common. So I guess, I mean, I don't know, this leads us nicely onto our next kind of thing that we wanted to explore, which was like, how does our location that we've, you know, just explained, how would you guys say that has kind of shaped the way that you either approach world Christianity, or what in general are your thoughts on location and world Christianity in, you know, bringing those two together?
I think, yeah, my research right now, location and the research I'm doing is, they're inseparably entangled. To the point that my research, I started as an experiment to study alternative expressions of Christology. And now it seems to be evolving to land and landedness and expressions, really expressions of locality, how that faith, Christianity as a faith is embedded in the land.
That's quite so literally. Interesting.
So, which obviously means that it's so... location and research, my research is so connected. And so my question really, I started with the question, how do these wrong way Christians theologize? Do they even theologize? do they take God, you know, like theology, beliefs, all the faith, all these things seriously? And why aren't there theological treatises that I'm seeing like in the bookstore, you know? And what about these uneducated people who just like to sing, who just like to attend social gatherings? Why are there only songbooks? Why are people only gathering in social gatherings with a lot of ritualistic elements and formalities that me in my high-handed evangelical perspective was nonsense? But I started to realize that there are different ways in which these wrong ways were practicing and performing their faith. And I realized that Christianity has taken on an embodied and embedded and a landed kind of expressions that are very characteristic of that specific locality. And this is fascinating because Christianity, as we know, is a global religion, and yet it's so landed. And so, some of the other questions associated to land is how their visions of like economic and development are intertwined in that Christianity, in the way Christianity is understood, and how everyday practices and social lives are also intertwined in that religion. So obviously what all these means is that these are huge issues of landedness, of being in that location. I could go on, but then I think I'll stop from there. And my point being that location is such an important part of my research.
I think that's so interesting. I hadn't really kind of considered about location as something that is, when you talk about embodied, like, I think that's a really interesting way of looking at location, like Christianity or your faith or your spirituality as being embodied and embedded, located within yourself, right? And like in the songs, in your mouth, in your, you know, the way you're speaking about it, the way you're singing about it. That's so interesting.
Yeah, I when you talked about location, it's interesting that exploration of the faith there directly is manifested as a landedness, an issue of the land. I mean, that's something we can see, we can touch. That's actual physical location, right? My understanding of it, or at least in my context, a little different. I understood location as something that's a part of our context, the lens which we view our Christianity or any subject matter for that matter. Like for me, the connections between location and my research have been essential in a sense. Mentioning about me being baptized in a Chinese house church, that experience in itself is considered generally viewed as positive marker, or even a key, a sort of a key, if you will, which has opened up a lot of access to more conservative Chinese Christians. So like, you know, I tell them about my past and they say, oh, okay. Well, you know, they think, oh, this guy's trustworthy. You know, he went into a house church, right? But also my location being a U.S. Right, I passed the test, right? Well, I got another test I passed, which is also I'm a U.S. citizen, which significantly reduces, and in some cases completely eliminates any suspicions of perceived harmful intentions. So, and I know that sounds really weird, strange to say, but it just is for this context, which is that being a U.S. citizen, it makes you less suspicious than if I were, say, a Chinese citizen conducting the same research. So I think just to talk about location, in the broader scope, I would say that rural Christianity is shaped and defined by the location of its participants, but as well as, you know, the location of where the participants are, right, the landedness. And I think that while participants, they mold the faith and they mold the future, they kind of guide the future of this faith, they're also simultaneously recipients of the locations of others in the faith, right? So you'll see influences coming across, going across the ocean to other people, right? And as time continues, I think that this faith ebbs and flows. It moves in different ways. Its content changes. And I think that it's particularly valuable for us to document that change, to track that change, even if we're only observing like in one pixel for 1 second in the grand scope of history, right? I think it's really important. And that's something which my research helps achieve, that one pixel for 1 second.
Well, I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it, because, and a very kind of positive way of looking at it, right? Because we can never fully capture, especially something as dynamic as spirituality and faith and theology, like you can't really capture or do justice to how it's being embodied, lived out, et cetera, et cetera. But what we can do is try and just capture like a small glimpse of it in that moment in time and be like, hey, these are what Christians among my particular ethnic group are thinking about land and theology within the time that I was looking at them. But I don't know, I thought it was really cool. And a lot of what you said, Chao, was kind of resonates with what I was going to say on location and world Christianity. And I think, you know, I just want to echo what you were saying about how it's a give and take. We need to recognize the plurality and the diversity of the experiences, viewpoints, histories, theologies within Christianity. And much of the study of Christianity has taken place from a Western location or a vantage point. And these claims that have come from that vantage point have been said to be universal, but they're not, as we now know. It's, you know, and I think what Christianity has as its core, a recognition that Christianity has always had a global dimension to it, and that for much of Christian history, only one particular location has been privileged. So we need this multiplicity of locations, of models, of approaches, of perspectives to kind of do justice to this massive field that is world Christianity.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was going to respond to your term of privilege, right? And in terms of privilege, I would say that it's Western forms of Christianity is probably more privileged in the Western world, and in particular in the academic setting.
Yeah.
But I didn't see that when I was out exploring the rural house churches of China. I saw that while Western Christianity was clearly an influence, and it would influence the people there, but the people didn't necessarily give it. They would reject it if it didn't align with their experiences, and they would even take on different theologies. Yeah, I think it depends on our location, where we are. That privilege level goes up and down.
Oh, yeah. Right? Precisely. Because I would say the opposite is true in my particular context in Chin State in Myanmar.
Same. I would say that too.
Yeah, I thought there was a lot of like, oh, okay, you know, a lot of influence from like the American evangelical American Baptists that kind of came over and converted us. Like, there's still a lot of people who would kind of subscribe to that uncritically, in my opinion. But yeah, I mean, I take your point about how there is like, there is some pushback from like, there are certain aspects of Western Christianity that they don't love. But I don't know, you're saying it's similar for you, do you?
Yeah, I mean, this could probably lead to another episode because there's a lot to talk about here. But just to say that institutionally, I think what we're saying, that the viewpoint from the West might be prioritized, but on the ground, what Chow might be saying might be true, even in our places where there's some sense of agency in their own lived experiences versus the one that the pastor from the pulpit is promoting. Yeah. But yeah, I think that's a completely different trajectory, but that we can explore.
Well, there you go. This highlights the importance of, you know, saying our location and stating where are we doing world Christianity from, where are we doing our academic studies from.
Exactly.
Yeah, and just to hammer that a little bit more, the thing I've observed, and let me know if you know you guys see it too in your settings, is that the source of the faith, the substance in faith, I see that on the grassroots level moves way more away from academic theology, and it moves a lot more into charismatic experiences. See that as a main driver in this. So, not to you know always talk about my research, but this is why it's so important to study charismatics, to see what's going on, how charismatic faith relates to theology, right?
I love the confidence you have in like the importance of your own work. Like, I need that. I'm like, yeah, okay, I guess maybe when someone wants to read it. Or it's like Chow's like, this is much needed research that's gonna change the face of theology forever. I love that. It's so funny when we're talking about like this kind of like, you know, our experiences of our churches in our own context, because that kind of, again, going back to the topic of location, like, I really didn't give a single thought as to like where my position or the position that I'm coming from in academic circles until I began my MTH in World Christianity, actually, because it was there when we were kind of surrounded by other students from places such as Hong Kong, Nigeria, America, Korea, et cetera, like, it was there that I kind of realized that I was interested in Myanmar theology and Christianity in Myanmar, but I couldn't actually tell you a lot about it because that was not my experience. Like, I grew up in Britain, so I could tell you a lot about British Anglicanism and, you know, things like that. But I couldn't actually tell you what Christians in Myanmar were thinking about this particular topic that we were discussing at the time. So I don't know. I just kind of thought it was interesting that, like, you know, your location also shifts depending on the context that you're in, the people that you're surrounded by, like, you know, among you guys, I might feel quite comfortable being like, yeah, I'm from a mixed location, I'm from a mixed background, whatever you might want to say it. But then among other Zomi people, I might be very British. And among other British people, I might be very Zomi. So.
Well, you know, we could talk about this all day, right? Location, right? And I'm sure you as a listener, you want to talk to us too about this. So we unfortunately, the podcast, you know, we can't go on forever, right? So we do thank you for listening. We thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed our time together. This is our first time, so there are a lot of rough edges, you know, a lot of rough edges. We're going to smooth them out as we continue, right? We signed up for at least, what, 10? Did we sign up for 10?
I think 12.
12. Oh, 12. At least 12. Wow.
So if we can hit our stride by 10, then I think we're fine. We're solid.
So we are financially obligated to do 12 of these.
Financially obligated.
So hopefully by the 12th, our edges will be not harder, but smoother. And if that is so, then hey, maybe we'll continue, right? Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Because we're not pretending this. We certainly enjoy each other's presence. That's for certain.
Speak for yourself, Chow.
Okay. So we certainly had a great deal of pleasure putting this together for you. And if you're interested in World Christianity, this topic, a very special event is coming up, which is the Yale Edinburgh Group on World Christianity, and they'll be presenting papers on the topic of oral, print, and digital cultures. So this year it'll be held online from June 22nd to the 24th. Okay, so for more information on how to register, we're going to leave a link down below, okay? So just click that link and you can sign up for it. It's going to be awesome. Join us there.
Yeah.
As well as join us next time for...
I love how you're promoting it like it's a sexy event. And it's like, join us as we seriously discuss in an academic setting oral, print, and digital cultures on the history of Christian missions and world Christianity.
Totally sign up for the link, guys.
Right? Yeah, no, it is sexy. Go, it's a fun... Subscribe. It's a fun conference. I actually really enjoy it. It's a fun conference.
That should be fun.
Yeah, it should be good.
Okay, I'll have to join too then.
I'm doing a presentation too, so.
So come and hear him speak. It's going to be awesome.
Yes.
Next time, join us for a discussion on digital theology. We're going to have a great guest. It's going to be awesome. And so here at Voices of Christianity, we wish you all the best. Take care and stay safe.